Hallo und herzlich willkommen bei einer neuen Folge von Finance Forward. Mein Name ist John Stanley Hunter und ich spreche heute mit Olga Schichanzowa. Olga ist Investmentpartner beim Berliner VC Target Global und kümmert sich dort von der Seed-Runde bis zur Series C um alle Fintech-Beteiligungen. Dazu gehören Startups wie die KMU-Bank Finom, der israelische Zahlungsdienstleister Rapid oder auch das Insurtech WeFox. Vor ihrer Zeit in Berlin war die gebürtige Russin in Moskau aktiv. Sie kennt den Markt dort gut und weiß, warum russische Fintechs wie die Modulbank und Tinkoff so erfolgreich sind. Das Gespräch haben Olga und ich auf Englisch geführt. So, Olga, you once told me that you're one of the very, very few people at Target Global who cover all different stages of investment and who takes their investments through all the stages because of you doing fintech. How did that happen?
Yes, this is true. So like since Target has like a few fund entities, so we have early stage fund for seed and series A investments. We have growth stage fund for like series B and above. It happened that I'm the one who's doing fintech across all of them. And even like we also have mobility fund. And if fintech touches mobility, which also happens, I also take care of it. Why it happened and how it happened, I think probably because of my background, it again somehow happened that I started my career in VC with fund which was focusing on fintech mostly. The fund was called and is called Finside Ventures. It's half Moscow, half Silicon Valley based fund, which mostly focused on alternative lending and different applications of alternative lending in different countries. So we did investments in Earning Daily Pay in the US, in Phoenix Cup in France. There were a few lending focused deals in Russia, and I was taking care of it when I joined as analyst. Right after that, I moved to build a fund from scratch for one of financial groups in Russia. One of the core assets of this group was the bank, and I also learned a lot in the how, basically in the field, like how banks look at the innovations, how they cooperate with startups, how they, what is their thinking about like acquisitions of the startups and like overall technology strategy. From that fund, we did quite a few deals, including one was not fintech, but I was still taking care of it. It was a Russian Deliveroo, which at that time was called a Food Fox. It was acquired by Yandex, which is, let's say, Russian Google. We also did a deal in deal with Raisin, which I mean I admire as a company, as a fintech, and it's a German fintech, and in many senses of it, I really think that this is a superb example of approach to the business and approach to building a fintech business. And after that, I moved to Target, and soon after I moved to Berlin to basically start doing all fintech deals across different stages, across like our countries where we are present, which is Europe mostly and Israel. And here we are right now. Yes.
So how did it happen that you came to Berlin? What arguments did Target bring forth to get you to work for them?
First of all, I was always excited to kind of grow further and grow outside of Russia and kind of keep growing. And that's why I was super excited in joining Berlin team. Then we can basically discuss why Berlin, but not London. But I really think that like Berlin has a lot of opportunities in pretty much everything, in venture overall, in fintech, basically traveling. And before COVID, travel was not a problem.
Yeah. So, take me through your day. What is it you do every day? I mean, You take care of the investments. What does that really mean on a daily basis? What do you do every day?
Yeah. This is actually an exciting question because when I go through my day, it looks like I touch pretty much all the processes, and this is the exciting part of our VC job. I believe so. First of all, we already have, like, I personally already have investments done in Target, and I take care of over 10 companies. And indeed, my day includes constant communication with these teams, which is on WhatsApp basis, which is on personal meetings basis, and which is like really constant process. It's not something which happens like once per quarter. Since we enter early, we also very hands-on. And this is also my main kind of passion. When I have a chance to talk to entrepreneurs who are the best in what they're doing, they are the best. Basically, I learn from them all the time. And if I can have, and if I can give them value in what I'm strong at and in what we see as investors, it's super valuable for me, for them, and for all of us. So my day always includes talking to portfolio founders and helping them with as much as we can help. Sometimes it's marketing strategy. Sometimes it's helping to like fundraising, indeed, partnerships, and all the possible like potential exit opportunities, and all the potential ways how VC can help through our network. This is included in my day. It's always scouting for new companies. It's a constant process, and it should be all the time. And like, really, no matter if you're on vacation or not, you do this searching for opportunities. And this is a very broad process, which includes reading new things, which includes talking to new people, which includes talking to people who you know, to your founders, to basically diving into business all the time, because it can encloses and gives you new ideas and the ways to like what to look at. It also includes like execution of the deals. When we are in closing, I also do some legal work just to check the commercials of the documents and whatsoever. So yeah, it's like very complex. It includes everything from scouting to basically maybe some legal stuff. But I would tell that like most and the first thing, which is all the time in my job, it's like constant searching. For new opportunities, for new ideas, for new people. And this is the most exciting part.
So when you're scouting for new potential deals in the fintech space, what is it that you're looking for? What do they have to do? What are the things, the attributes you're looking for?
First of all, I would say these are people. Because all the time, I think that like VC job is all about people, because well, like market can change, and we see that it's happening like literally right now. The market is changing. All the approaches are changing. And this all gets to the team who can adapt to the new conditions, to the changing circumstances, and still build great things, find the ideas out of basically, it seems, out of nowhere. And out of crisis, they can build the amazing and superb things. So first of all, I'm searching for great teams. And I mean, it can sound banal because I think that all VCs will tell that, right? But this is what it is. What else I'm searching for? It's always the size of the market and size of the opportunity, because like you need to find really big problem which will solve like the existing way of resolving things, which will change lifestyle of the people and all the businesses which we are privileged to see right now, and which already kind of we are the users of it, and we don't really see it as the huge innovation because we got used to it, right? In example, I don't know, Uber, Lieferando, and all these things. We use it on a day-by-day basis, but one day it really changed the lives of the people. And searching for this kind of life change, lifestyle change things, it's an exciting part.
Mm-hmm. So when you look at the founders and also their potential background in the fintech space, there are a couple of startups founded by people with finance background. There are a couple mm-hmm. of ones with tech backgrounds. Do you have a preference here? Do you think like startups or fintechs with founders of tech background or finance background are better? suited for the market?
It's a good question, but it's always also about kind of balancing the team. Mm-hmm. It's always great when the company has and when the founder's team has a few people, when there are pure tech people who can build the best in-class product, when there are business-oriented people. And it also, it cannot be limited by like the background. These business-oriented people can have computer science degrees and they can be, they can also have the background in banking or in tech or in consulting. But if the way how they look at the things is super ambitious, if it's like very forward-looking when they think like many, many steps ahead to the basically to the extent where when you just don't get there, you just don't think about it in a day-to-day life, that matters.
So you just mentioned earlier about how you can travel less because of the COVID crisis. What else have you noticed in the fintech space or in your within your portfolio companies that these past few months have rapidly changed? Some things probably for the better, some things for the worse. What are your insights from the last few months from overlooking the fintech space?
Yeah, I mentioned that we basically cannot travel right now, which is for me personally, it's rather sad thing. But at the same time, it just highlighted to us that everything can be done remote. And it highlighted to us that remote way of thinking, of doing things will be with us for a long time. And I'm on the side of not focusing on the obstacles which COVID brought us. I'm on the side of finding new opportunities. And what I saw with our portfolio companies, they find great opportunities in it. Some of them pivoted the product to a new direction. Some of them launched new products to the market, basically benefiting from the... It's not maybe correct to say that benefiting of COVID, which is a disaster for like people as well, but benefiting from the problem which existed in the market, and they bring the solution. An example: integrating telemedicine into their products. It is not only about fintech, but fintech can also benefit of that. Like I'm investing in the company called Best Doctor. It's a company in Russia, and they were recognized as one of the most prospective fintechs, insurtechs in health industry. They launched four new products to the market on like COVID wave. And that's why I just think that we should really focus on these new opportunities and what also COVID highlighted to us, remote way of thinking and an example like bank accounts, which are already open to consumers in the digital way. It's not yet there for the companies. And that's why like companies who It sounds as simple as that, but who open digital bank accounts, they will benefit. And this will be the way of new life, because basically you don't need to like sacrifice your health going to the banking branch. You can do it remotely. It's also about payments, alternative payments, and everything what basically is highlighted to us that like cash is not there and now all moved to e-commerce and basically all alternative payments, all big brands who introduce payment within their ecosystems and who basically build fintech products themselves. This is a new wave of basically fintech development, this kind of infrastructure, this like every company is a fintech. It's also an excited opportunity. And the, I mean, speaking about our company, it's Rapid is benefiting with this very, very much. And this is also like I tell benefiting, but the market benefits of all of it. So you try to bring the solution to the market and basically really everyone benefits in this ecosystem, from the unbanked people to people who use cash to businesses who struggle to open the bank account. Like all the parties benefit, and this just basically makes the lives easier and it helps us to focus on the more important things, especially in the difficult times, rather than struggling with opening the bank account. Again, like simplifying to the maybe extreme extents.
Yeah. You mentioned before how you were in touch with your with the founders of your portfolio companies through WhatsApp sometimes. When the crisis hit in March, the outlook was very dark for many startups. Now we know a little better of how they, in retrospect, you can say, okay, some figured out ways to benefit or to not feel the hard parts of the crisis. But back then, did many of the founders reach out to you for additional funding in that time? Did they feel like they needed some more? How full was your WhatsApp inbox in March?
It's always full, independently on like COVID, not COVID, right? There were the situations when we brought additional funding to the companies. In some situations, we were very lucky in a way that our many portfolio companies of us, they raised financing in Q4, Q1, right before. But I would say that it's not the core problem. So there is enough funding in the market, and we can see that really many funds announced the new funds basically, in Europe, in US, but who moved to Europe, and there is sufficient amount of funding, and basically great companies still get many offers from the investors. But then basically the question of all the kind of existing investors maybe to help the companies like faster when to sort of save their forces and energy to do business and basically not to think about the funding at that stage.
Yeah. And recently Target Global invested or was part of a round with the Dutch company Finom the Netherlands, Finom. And yeah, you invested in that, and before that you scanned the business banking market, the B2B fintech market in Europe. What can you say about that? What learnings did you take away from that?
Yes, sure. I mean, this segment of B2B and mostly like SME banking, this was my all-time favorite, I would say, because SMEs, they are clearly the backbone of especially European economy, but at the same time, they're really underserved by not only fintechs, but by all the services which exist in the market. And this is like very unfair thing. And I was always thinking and searching for opportunities of what companies can change that. And I scanned all the SME banking market across Europe. And I also had my personal kind of national heritage, what I saw in banking in Russia when I was there. I saw how SME banking can work. And basically when the team of Model Bank, it's Russian bank, which does over 60 million in euro in net revenue, only on SME customers, only on transactions and kind of packages, not on lending. When the team decided to step down and basically build something in Europe, and when they found out that the opportunity in Europe really not yet kind of it's still there and the opportunity is untapped. When they entered this market, I was super excited, and I clearly realized that this is the team which we should fund. Speaking about that, the market overall is super fragmented. Indeed, there are the banking solutions also among fintechs here in Germany, not only in Germany. But it's so much fragmented that all SMEs have to basically sign up for tens of services and still do not get the service which they really deserve. So essentially, there is a new standard of digital banking, of digital way of doing things for consumers. And N26, Revolut, Monzo, they showed it to Europe that this is a new way how to do banking. SMEs do not feel it. They just don't have it. And freelancers who are same consumers, they are the same people who got used to do everything in the phone. They just cannot do business on the phone. This is one thing. Another thing is also that like all SMEs and freelancers, they spend like, there are many researchers about that. They spend like 75% of their time on tasks which do not really, which are not connected with their business itself. So these are kind of administrative things, financing things, and basically they spend time, efforts, and money on people who do these things. Like when they open bank account, when they search for financing, when they realize the payments, which is also a very complicated process, and it takes like up to 5 days to do payment from one company to another and to pay for invoice on invoicing and on payroll and many things like that. And if there is the opportunity to basically bring all of it together and build the service which can make the lives of SMEs, financial management of all their tasks simpler, and basically gather all many fragmented things in one, It's an opportunity for us, an investor, and it's an opportunity for the company to resolve this problem. And this is what we found with Finom.
Mm-hmm. You said how, given your Russian heritage, you knew about what was possible for the B2B mm-hmm. market, probably citing Modul Bank, which is one of the very few ones who's actually managed to be profitable.
Yeah.
So what do they do different? What are the things that... that European fintechs could potentially learn from then, other than what you've just mentioned, but basically giving out the whole package of everything that a SME needs or deserves?
Mm-hmm. Yes, basically they put SME needs at the first place. The customer and all their needs, like starting from payments, ending with like legal and contracts signing, they brought everything in one service. The core to their success was, there were a few things. First of all, basically keeping all core functions in-house. They were a licensed bank, and they could do all the onboarding of the customers, KYC compliance layer, and service all in-house. And this independence on any other third-party provider, and basically keeping quality control in one place and taking care of all the core processes, enabled them to bring the level of service really which never existed before. The second thing I would add to that, it's basically all the other processes which go in addition to the banking. First is to open the bank account, and another thing is to print all other needs and cover all of them, like accounting, invoicing, payroll, and keeping all of it in one place, enabled them to basically have like become the central service and the backbone of the financial life of the company. And it also simplified many functions of like whole finance teams, right? And that's why even without going into lending, they managed to give the packages of service, which included everything like from payments to payroll to the customers. And they just didn't imagine any other way of doing things. And they were paying for that and it made them profitable. And keeping the processes in-house without basically relying on others enabled them to do the things faster. An example, like if you take existing banks, like incumbents, it takes them about like 9 people to who participate in the process of onboarding of a customer, like on different stages, like KYC checks, like multiple checks, onboarding itself, like financial approval, like final approval of the customer. So there are like 9 people who are involved in that process, which sounds insane, right? Just to open one bank account. Model Bank managed to do it just with 2. So they highly automated everything what happened inside, and basically they became the standard for compliance and onboarding, like in KYC terms, which was after many years approved by Central Bank as the kind of standard how to do things. And this standard doesn't exist yet here by multiple reasons, right? First of all, like there are historical reasons to this. Historically, Russian banking is like it was formed many years later than Europe. And that's why like even incumbents, they are more techy and they can launch things faster. They are more flexible in these terms in all the innovations. Of course, like innovations were created, I would say, more by like private banks, like Model Bank for SMEs, Tinkoff for retail banks. And then like incumbents, they just caught up on this and also launched many digital products. And basically this like overall ecosystem of how banking and compliance layer and like regulatory level can work, this is very different to Europe, and we cannot tell that like everything should change on all the regulatory levels. It's just different. But what really can be changed is the new standard of doing things which can be brought to the customers if you put the customer first. This is what Phenom is bringing to the market right now.
Yeah. Do you feel like it's a, when comparing the Russian and the European market in that regard, do you feel like it's been undervalued of how easy module had it with scaling up within one language? Like you have one product and you can scale it up on the huge Russian market, whereas when you try to do the same in Europe, you'll have to quickly add a bunch of different languages and well, as you mentioned, regulatory backgrounds. Do you feel like that comparison, I feel that could also play a role in this?
It's actually a super interesting question, and maybe not very obvious one, because Russia is huge. And regions, the way of doing business in the regions, and also, let's say, kind of cultural habits, behavior level is very different. And one thing is working, like one thing is Moscow SME, another thing is SME in the middle of Russia or in the far east of Russia. And that's why the approach and go-to-market strategy was very different for all these regions. And that's why in some regions, it was it was necessary to open the branch, just because the people never even thought about the way that everything can be done online, and they needed this branch just kind of on mindset level. And Model Bank in Russia had to adjust to these specific features of the regions. And in that way, looking at how they managed to do it, it seemed that like Russia with all the regions was kind of, I cannot tell like MVP, right, of what happens in Europe. But it's very similar in a way that it's also very kind of diverse by regions. Same in Europe. Indeed, there are different, first of all, there are different like regulations. Even if we have like that everything is EU, still the local regulations, local approach, they are different. There are different customers. There are different needs. And there is different cultural and behavioral level, and you also need to adjust to it. And that's why like the product team and actually it can be very interesting to you to speak in one of the podcasts or just like in general with their CPO who is based here in Berlin. Mm-hmm. That's why like the product team need to build the product kind of modular to be adjustable by the markets, by the needs, and at the same time to be kind of manageable from the top. And we see it right now, and the team is working on it, and it's exciting part because the launch will be soon, including Germany.
Yeah. So N26 and Revolut also, I mean, they've established that what they can do in the B2C market, but they're also trying to get into the B2B market, or at least have some offerings in that. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like they can be serious players in the B2B market, or do they have what it takes for that?
Well, first of all, they are already very serious players in the banking ecosystem overall. And thanks to them, they showed, as I mentioned, this digital way of doing business and doing things and doing banking. And they already made a huge effort, and they keep doing this in the, let's say, market education, people's education. And all these people who were educated by them to do personal banking online, they can do now launch their business as freelancers, a small enterprise, like having two or three people or kind of doing a family business. This is first thing where they are undoubtedly super important players to the ecosystem overall. When we speak about SMEs in particular, these are very different needs and kind of ways of doing ways of scoring and ways of onboarding and ways of servicing of the customers, because the needs are very different. First, it starts with onboarding. When you are a single person who needs to kind of introduce your like main things, main kind of data to the bank, and when you need to be kind of KYC'd, this is one thing. When it's a business, it's a very different approach how to check this business and verify it. And onboarding is super important part of the process, because basically every customer gets attached to the service while being onboarded. Because if the process of onboarding is very painful, no one wants to use the product anymore. And the onboarding process is very much dependent on the kind of SME expertise. Indeed, N26 and Revolut have great teams and all the resources to bring people who will be building it. But the product itself, like from architecture way of doing things, it's different. And they can serve very successfully freelance level of customers. But when you go to kind of teams of like 30, 50, 100 people, you need to have different processes and you need to offer different product, which is much more complicated than just, invoicing, or than just like dividing of your transactions into different categories, which is also very important for the market overall. But then you just go into level of like payrolls, into level of tax compliance across different markets. An example, when the company sells in a few regions, it goes to cross-border transactions, and it's just much more different like needs to be served comparing to consumers. But at the same time, I still think that there are a lot to be done in consumer space for them, which they already serve and which can be easier. But all in all, I just think that the market is so huge that it is great that all these players, including already big startups, including incumbents, including new young startups, they all go for this segment. Because it will be the main kind of driving force which will bring market forward and which will basically help SMEs to get the service which they deserve by forces of all these companies at the time.
Do you feel like it's a good idea for a fintech startup to try both B2C and both B2B? I mean, if one of your portfolio companies were to say, okay, we're doing this well, but we're thinking about going into the other space as well, mm-hmm. would you recommend that to them?
I personally think that it's, first of all, the question is what's the particular product and the service? But all in all, I think that B2C and B2B are very different. And you can do both, but it should be done at a certain point of time when basically at least one of the products already reached the level when the second can be launched. In terms of like not like the products themselves, many products can be run at a time, but like B2C and B2B, it's like the very different paradigm of doing business.
Mm-hmm. Now N26 has now got a new Attacker, basically, that was recently founded here in Berlin, Vivid Money, mm-hmm. which comes from two people who were previously at Tinkoff, mm-hmm. which is another exciting Russian, fintech company, yeah. bank. It's somewhere in between. Tech. It's already a little older than the startups that, that we usually talk about. Now Tinkoff is another great example of good banking, but, how is it that the Russian market has such strong players both in the B2C and in the B2B market? What does Russia do differently?
I mean, I can be the ambassador of Russian fintech entrepreneurs here, and basically we already see it. So many entrepreneurs came to European market, and I mean Revolut is built by Russian entrepreneur Nikolai Finom team. They're Russian. Vivid team. There are other new super young fintechs coming here in Berlin and starting from France, like Zelf, Gems, and there are kind of already grown up companies like Marketing Boys. One of co-founders is also Russian. So I can be an ambassador of Russian fintech entrepreneurs and Russian banking overall. So what's different in Russia? First of all, as I briefly mentioned, very different kind of historical background. The banking was formed later. That's why it still can be kind of very easily and flexibly innovated. Tinkoff became, I would say, the first driving force of that innovation. And they built a huge bank, but at the same time, it's like real tech company, which is driven by tech rules rather than banking rules. They moved to SME space, but they moved at the point when they already had millions of B2C customers, and B2C was already kind of up and running, operationally profitable, and kind of established business. And what happened with them, it was basically they educated the market. I very much refer to this kind of market education, but it's very important. So basically they educated the market that everything can be done online with just one click and delivered to your house next day. This is still the most fascinating thing, which I really miss here in Germany. So they taught the people that it can be done that way. They already had like millions, if I'm not mistaken, like over 3 million of B2C customers using their credit cards, using their current accounts and the services on top of it. And after that, they moved to SME segment, starting with freelancers, who were basically the portion of B2C customers who just moved to do something on their own. And after this kind of freelance segment, they just built the services on top for kind of B2B and teams of like 30 people, 50 people, 100 people, and even more. And the same happened with their trading product, which is also super exciting because basically they had this portion of like at that time when they just started that product, it was like now they have something like 7 million customers, I think, maybe more. At that point, it was like, let's say 2-3 million. They were not really trading sophisticated customer base. And they started offering them trading product, super kind of user-friendly. You don't need to have a special trading background in understanding the graphs or whatever. They just offered a very simple tool for a very simple user to trade with shares. And first, they kind of tackled the segment of like very non-sophisticated users. But then they also managed to extend this product to the way that now like super sophisticated users with like millions on their bank account also use it because it's just very, very user-friendly tool. And that was done like by way of kind of constant education. And now with building this kind of as a tech company with different kind of segments, products, and very kind of complex structure, they managed to do it differently. But the core there, in my opinion, was that they handled all this infrastructure, including banking license themselves. That's why they were able to build all these processes and be in charge of them without relying on third parties and without kind of being dependent in quality service on any of the processes which they offered to the customers. Indeed, they have many integrations. An example, I'm still a user of Tinkoff. I cannot do much. I cannot trade shares there anymore because I'm resident here in Berlin. But at the same time, I'm just as a user, and as a maybe just fan of fintechs, I get huge aesthetic joy when I see on how the things are done with like even marketing strategy for like, let's say Instagram story style, when you can see what are the offerings. Of course, I cannot buy and I don't need to buy now tickets to movie theater, but it's all done with the partnerships there. It's done like a seamless integration when you can buy everything within this app without going to external website and whatever. Of course, they don't have like movie theaters as part of their business. Of course, this is integration, but the core processes, which is banking, it's in-house.
Mm. A lot of what you just described resembles the pitch that Vivid came to Germany with. Mm-hmm. And one thing is very different. In Germany, they don't have their own banking license.
Sure.
Yet, maybe, I don't know. They use the one from Solaris Bank. How much do you feel like, or how do you assess the potential that Vivid has in Germany with the same learnings that the two guys who founded it took from Tinkoff?
Yeah, I mean, the time will show, obviously. But at the same time, I think that we are all in the framework when you cannot have the banking license just tomorrow. And at the same time, we are all in the framework when you should launch the products faster, but not wait for 2 years of approval because market is better and the whole ecosystem is changing too fast. That's why I truly think that this is just inevitable to start with the partners. But then the way is how you build the processes with the partner and how much you basically responsibility you take. Even building something on top of, let's say, Solaris infrastructure and bank accounts, you can build your own product with the building blocks, which allow you to basically have like final responsibility for the quality which you offer with the quality of customer service. And this is basically the core which they will offer to the consumers. And like the rails with Solaris, they are already very much established and it's not something risky. But like the customer service which you take and which they will do, this is the core which basically they want to bring to the market.
Mm.
Yeah, but indeed, I'm not adding that they will come and 26 should be frightened of them, right? No, it will be amazing player, amazing team, which came to the market and which will make basically all our lives better because we will see what other products can be launched on top of banking and we will see the new basically paradigm of thinking in terms of our day-to-day retail banking.
Mm. Now we talked a lot about the past, the COVID crisis. Let's look into the future a little bit. Fintech trends that excite you. What mm-hmm. what ideas are being developed, and what you find the most mm-hmm. interesting at the moment? What excites you the most?
Yeah, in terms of trends, first of all, I think that it's the brightest time for fintech right now. And many brands which are not fintech, they go into finance services and we already can see it. From the brands like Apple, Samsung to the brands like Uber and like Grab, which was the example for Asia kind of super app / kind of company which moved to the fintech ecosystem. Among another trends, I already above mentioned the remote way of thinking, which was shown us by COVID. This will be with us, and we will see more and more companies in this space. Other than that, I think that this is truly the time for infrastructure in payments, in banking, in kind of cross-section of regulations and like RegTech and FinTech. A huge trend is still in the gig economy, which is growing, and the basically more gig economy workers will be in place after COVID, right? More workers will become freelancers and their needs are underserved, and FinTech can help with this. And lastly, there are so many industries which are huge and still have so many ways to innovate, including capital markets, including insurance, including tax underlying regulations and kind of invoicing and whatever what goes to cross-border things. The market opportunity is huge. And when everything went remote and online, this becomes even bigger. And the companies who can tackle this from financial service side of things, they will win, and they will show us new opportunities which no one of us expected.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for taking the time today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting.